Do you like movies? Then Netflix is the place for you. Would you like to support this podcast? Use the red stamp-shaped Netflix affiliate banner link in the show notes at truckertompodcast.com for a free trial and instantly begin streaming movies right to your computer or TV set-top box. Tango Tango Papa 1414, September 28, 2010.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from home. There was no podcast for the past 3 days. Friday, was it Friday? I believe it was Friday. I unloaded at Anderson. I think it was Friday. I unloaded at Anderson, Indiana. And then ended up, maybe it was Saturday, I don't remember anymore, but ended up, maybe it was Saturday morning, I ended up unloading in Anderson. Now I'm all confused. It was either Friday or Saturday, but in any case, unloaded there, and then they had a load that picked up at, or was it Franklin? Franklin, I unloaded at Franklin, and then I was going to reload at Anderson basically Saturday. Yeah, it's like Saturday evening it was supposed to. So I unloaded Friday at Franklin. We'll get this straight. Franklin is, Indiana is south of, Indianapolis, just south of Indianapolis. And then so I reloaded at, Sunday morning at Anderson, Indiana, which Anderson is kind of north and maybe a little bit east along Interstate 69 of Indianapolis. And then that load delivered this afternoon, this afternoon being Monday afternoon, late Monday afternoon, you know, really early Monday evening at Clarksville, Arkansas. So I picked that load up. It was yesterday being Sunday, picked the load up at there at Anderson, Indiana, and then the way they had, there's a number of ways you can, there's a couple of ways you can go routing wise, and they had, you know, I have to kind of go by the routing that's given to me in my Qualcomm by the company, by my company, because they send along a fuel, suggestion, you know, place where they want you to get fuel at. And one of the places was Rolla, Missouri, which is along Interstate 44. And so once I'm down Interstate 44, then obviously you really have to, you know, then this, even the routing, suggested to come all the way down and then down Interstate 540 and then back to the east on Interstate 40 back over to Clarksville, because there's not any really decent routes, you know, that go north and south between Interstate 44 and, and Interstate 40, in Arkansas. You can go down, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's kind of convoluted. If you go down U.S. Highway 65 from Springfield, it ends up cutting, back to the, it goes south, but it ends up going back to the east, back towards Conway, and so then you'd end up backtracking. So one way or the other, you end up backtracking. So it, since it was routed down 540, of course I live just a couple of miles off of Interstate 540, so I figured out that I could come home. I had just enough time to make it home. So I made it home about 11, I guess it was about 11 o'clock last night. Got home here and then spent the night here. Got up this morning and then left here. I guess it was about 3 o'clock this afternoon. I left here and went on down to, took the load on down to Clarksville. Got there right at 5:30. It had a 6:30 p.m. appointment. They'll let you in an hour early. Got there right at 5:30 and got back into the dock. And then I guess it was about a quarter after 8 this evening whenever the guy came and told me that the load was unloaded and the paperwork was ready to go. And so it was, got out of there and then I made it home. I don't know. It was probably sometime after 10, whenever I made it home here. So right now it's almost midnight. It's 11:57 p.m. So, have made it home, and so I'm home, going to be home for several days. Takes, just some time off, get away from the truck once again, and, just kind of enjoy being away from the truck and kind of have a different, just completely different way of life for a few days, and then, in about 4 or 5 days, I get to, usually that's enough, and then I get to the point where I'm ready to go back to work, and then, so it's, as I've said many times, I've got a pretty good mix between working and taking the time off at the end of the month, beginning of the month. The mix works pretty good, basically three and a half weeks out in the truck and then come home towards the end of the month, beginning of the month, take about 5 days, 4 or 5 days off. Then I'm ready to go back to work again. And, so as long as I don't take too much time off all at once, or if, or try to stay out in the truck too long, cause I'll risk, getting burned, either burned out one way or the other, So if I keep the right mix, then it, of not too much work, no more than about three and a half weeks of work and, being gone, and then, about 4 or 5 days at home, and then, and then I don't get tired of either one. So anyway, while I was, there in Indiana kind of waiting, I ended up watching a number of different things on Netflix. Now I've got some trailers that I want to play from that. Now there weren't trailers for everything that I watched. There's some of the stuff that I watched, it was like PBS, some PBS stuff, American Experience. One of the things I watched was this, it was a two-part series about Ronald Reagan. And, so that I looked on YouTube and there was no trailer for that. And, I think I watched another American Experience thing I watched. It was about the 1929, stock market crash. That there was not a trailer for that either. But, in any case, I'm going to go ahead and just start playing some of the trailers of the stuff that I watched. There was one of the things I watched there on Netflix. It's called, it was a German film in, with English subtitles. It's called, The Experiment, or Das Experiment. It's a German film, obviously, and it was made in Germany, and it was, German actors, and they spoke in German, and so they had English subtitles. And so let me see here. Well, that's not going to work. Hang on here. What I'm going to have to do is because this trailer, I watched the trailer a while ago after I got it off of YouTube. I watched it and there was, it's just, they're not putting any, words in it at all. It's just they're flashing English words up on the screen. So what I'm going to have to do is, as I play this thing, what I'm going to have to do is simply read you the words, and then that, because otherwise it's just going to be when I play the trailer here, it's just going to be kind of music, you know, there's different dramatic music, and then that's it, and that's obviously not going to be very helpful, because all you have is just the audio version, so I'm going to have to read this. So let me see if I can start this thing playing. Okay, so there. Okay, they volunteered for an experiment. They gave up their freedom. Their privacy. Their lives. Now there's no turning back. The experiment. Are you up to the challenge? Billing Block. So that was the trailer for The Experiment. So let's see what else there is here. Of course I had the Netflix Blu-rays and DVDs, and so in my queue I had The Blu-ray that I had waiting on me when I got home, and I already watched it. It was 9, and I guess I don't know. It's just number 9. You know, the digit number 9 is the name of the movie, and I had gone by. I'd ran into it when I was kind of poking around on Netflix. I read the description. And I must have glossed over the part that said it was animated, because I'm not a big fan of these animated movies necessarily, like the animated sci-fi type thing. You know, and this is obviously animated fantasy, whatever. And so I watched it. It was kind of short. It was like an hour and 19 minutes. I watched the Blu-ray, you know, put a little bit of it last night, and then the rest of it this morning after I woke up. And I don't know, it's kind of like what this is. It's sort of a fantasy kind of a thing, and it's kind of like a post-apocalyptic world, and, you know, these, you know, the machines have destroyed the world, and so the inventor of the machine that destroyed the world also invented he made these little mechanical puppet things, and he put his soul into them, and and they end up kind of saving, you know, or living their, you know, I don't know, they're supposed to be the life that goes on or something after, I don't know, because all human beings are all dead or something. But so it's I don't know, it was kind of a really, it was okay, but I really wouldn't recommend it. But anyway, here's the trailer for 9.
We had such potential, such promise, but we squandered our gifts, and so 9. I am creating you. Our world is ending. Life must go on. Fear is the appropriate response.
tremble.
Okay, so there was the trailer for Nine, and I don't know, the other part that, you know, is kind of stupid about the thing was, you know, the imagery that they use, this, you know, they got this post-apocalyptic world, and of course, you know, it's all high definition, it's animated, and everything's, you know, it's really super high definition, but, you know, especially because it was Blu-ray, but in any case, the imagery of this evil machine, you know, that they accident, you know, the guy, the number nine awakens this machine, you know, that had destroyed the world. You know, he somehow awakened it, and then he had to put it, you know, basically kill it again. But you know, they kept showing these oil well, you know, like you've seen the, you know, you're driving along out in the country and you see the thing going up and down. Well, they kept, you know, that was part of the imagery, and they, you know, they had smokestacks, and, you know, so they're sort of programming you, you know, if you're a kid especially, or, you know, somebody watching this. You know, they're trying to say that, you know, basically they're using this imagery to kind of program kids to think that, you know, oil wells are bad and smokestacks are bad and any kind of industry is bad and so on and so forth. And it's just kind of propagandistic. It really is. But so I don't know. I was kind of really disappointed with that. Another movie that I ended up watching was a movie from 1992. It's also off of Netflix. It's called Pure Country, starring George Strait. Remember George Strait? I don't know. Is George Strait still come up with new music these days? I don't know. But he was pretty popular back in the early 90s. You know, at least he was pretty active in the country music thing, as far as I remember. But so in any case, there was this movie called Pure Country that they made. And, you know, God, that's like 18 years ago. But anyway, I watched the thing, and it's not, you know, the movie, it's sort of leaves something to be desired, you know, plot-wise. And George Strait is a horrible actor. You know, he's just basically just kind of just saying his lines. In many cases, he does, you know, he's doesn't have any emotion. you know, and as I say, the plot kind of leaves something to be desired. It's just basically a, I don't know. I watched it. It wasn't, you know, it was okay, but I'd never seen it before. But anyway, here's the trailer for Pure Country, starring George Strait.
Warner Brothers presents George Strait in his motion picture debut.
Where the sidewalk ends and the road begins, we said goodbye.
He had gone farther than he had ever thought. Done everything he had ever wanted.
You bet I'm not.
And felt more alone than he could ever have imagined.
Sometimes I just want to dump the whole deal. Girl, old bud, I think I'm just going to take me a little walk.
So he set out to find the kind of love.
Did he say where he was going?
I'm pretty worried about him.
You follow the roots, you'll find it.
He had only sung about.
You know, I used to play in here years ago.
Let me be your mailman, and I'll always come through. Like Pony Express in the Wild Wild West, I'll ride.
It's more fun than I've had in a long time.
Cause I'm a top flight, hold me tight, get you there by daylight. Be right overnight, man.
So you really can play that thing, huh?
I was wondering, what are you running from?
In all the world.
She opened his heart.
Haven't you ever been in love before?
brought back his hope.
You're quite a talented man, Mr. Wyatt.
And helped him find the truth.
Just me and my guitar. You think anybody'd buy that?
In his own music.
As true as mine.
George Strait, Leslie Ann Warren, Isabel Glasser. Pure Country. Directed by Christopher Kane.
Okay, so there was the trailer for Pure Country. You know, and you could tell even in the trailer, you know, he's just basically just saying his lines. He's, you know, and it's probably, I don't know if that was probably the only movie that he was ever in, but I don't know that. I'd have to really look on it. I'd probably have to look on Wikipedia and really find out, but, you know, I don't know. I watched it, but, you know, this afternoon, but it, I don't know. At least I didn't turn it off. There's some of them, once in a while I'll watch something and I turn it off, but at least I did watch this one. Another more interesting one that I watched last night after I got home here, you know, and I was cooking myself something to eat. There's this movie called The Goebbels Experiment. Joseph Goebbels was Adolf Hitler's, basically was like a spinmeister, you know, a propaganda guy. And so what this is, this Goebbels experiment, they're showing, you know, all of the, basically it's mostly old black and white footage of Hitler Germany. But this Joseph Goebbels kept a diary. And so they've got selected pieces of his diary that, you know, they've got someone, you know, voice actor reading different pieces of Joseph Goebbels' diary. You know, of course, it's all in chronological order. Now, I don't think they've read the whole thing, obviously, but they've read, you know, just selected parts of it. And it's quite interesting to, you know, to listen to. Now, I couldn't really find a trailer for it, but I did. What I ended up finding was I don't know if this kind of passes for a trailer, but I ended up finding a couple of different parts of it. One of them is about 3 minutes and 17 seconds long. And then there's another part of it that's 1 minute and 49 seconds. And so probably, I don't know, I'm going to play both of these and probably just edit them together before, you know, when I render this podcast out. So anyway, here is some of the audio from the Goebbels experiment.
September the 1st, 1939. Yesterday. At noon, the Führer issues the order to attack at about 5 a.m. It seems the die is cast now. Göring remains skeptical. The Führer doesn't believe the English will intervene. Excitement has reached a maximum level. At home, work. I put finishing touches to the proclamation to the people and the party. I work on propaganda posters for Poland. We are prepared. April the 18th, 1940. The Führer praised the Luftwaffe. It has completely revolutionized war. In the long term, sea power will be no match for air power. We have an advantage in this area and need to maintain it at all times. Question: when are we going to make our move? That depends on the weather, which is still lousy. We need to attack England. And once we start, we must finish the job. We can't afford any more delays, so we need to be patient. July the 5th, 1940. How much longer until it really gets going? I can hardly restrain our press, and the people too. They are thirsting for war against England. June the 22nd, 1941. Yesterday, I told my staff. Incredible astonishment everywhere. The majority had already guessed the truth. started working immediately, feverishly. The radio, press, and newsreel services were all mobilized. Everything ran like clockwork. 3:30 a.m. The heavy artillery is thundering now. God bless our weapons. Outside, Wilhelmplatz is empty and silent. Berlin is slumbering. The Reich is slumbering. A great, wonderful era giving birth to a new Reich. A painful birth, maybe, but it is already striving towards the light. A new fanfare is resounding, powerful, thunderous, and majestic. I read out the Führer's proclamation to the German people for all the radio stations. It was a momentous occasion for me as well. The burdens of weeks and months past were shed. I feel utterly liberated.
Der Führer zieht nach monatelangem Schweigen nunmehr in zwölfter Stunde die noch einzig mögliche Konsequenz mit den Worten: Ich habe mich entschlossen, das Schicksal und die Zukunft des Deutschen Reiches wieder in die Hand unserer Soldaten zu legen.
June the 24th, 1941. 1,600 feet of newsreel from the start of our Russian campaign. Some of our new weapons are shown. Huge monstrosities that smash to pieces everything in their way. The divine judgment of history is being passed on the Soviet Union. The anti-Russian front in Europe is taking shape almost by itself. We are doing nothing ourselves so as not to arouse suspicion. I believe the war against Moscow will prove our greatest coup, psychologically, and perhaps even militarily as well. June the 27th, 1941. Statements from Russian prisoners of war reveal truly dreadful ignorance. That is the product of the Bolshevik education system. No sign of any training or discipline. Many soldiers are shooting themselves rather than being taken prisoner, because people have put the fear of God into them about our men. Our broadcast propaganda isn't getting through, so we need to drop leaflets in order to set them straight. August the 20th, 1941. The Führer has told me that I can deport the Jews from Berlin immediately the Eastern campaign is over. Berlin must be Jew-free. It is an outrageous scandal that 78,000 Jews, most of them parasites, can roam happily in the capital of the German Reich. They ruin not only the city's appearance, but the atmosphere as well. Things will change for the better when they have to wear badges, but getting rid of them is the only way to solve the problem completely.
So there was the there were a couple of different clips, and as I say, you're going to hear them all edited together. It's called the Goebbels Experiment. You can find that on Netflix. Now, if you haven't signed up for Netflix, go to my website, TruckerTomPodcast.com. In the show notes, you'll find red Netflix banner, that's a little square Netflix banner that's about the size of a oversized postage stamp. You can click on that and then sign up for Netflix, and I get some money off of that if for each person that signs up. If you want to help me out, that's one way to do it. I've got a I was kind of also, while I was waiting there in Indiana, I also ended up going on archive.org and going through and downloading some more of the movies, these different old black and white, most of them are old black and white movies from a lot of them from the 50s, 40s, 50s, and 40s, 50s, and some from the 60s. And then there's some even newer than it. Excuse me, even newer than that. But I found this one, and I'm not sure what year it was. Maybe I can find out here, but it's called Supervising Women Workers. Probably from the, I'm guessing this must be from the 50s or maybe the early 60s. Because if it was any later than that, it was politically incorrect. They would have never made it. But this Well, actually, I know it's from the 40s, because they're it's an influx of women workers because of the wartime, and anyway they made this film called Supervising Women Workers, and it's actually quite interesting, and it kind of speaks for itself. But in any case, here's the audio for Supervising Women Workers.
Joe Haley, there's one thing I'll say for you. You've done a good job. You know how to handle men, and you know how to keep the line moving.
Thanks, Mr. Brooks.
You work hard, Joe. You're a good foreman. Yes, women workers do present problems, Joe. It's tough, I know, but there are thousands of others, just like you, all over the country, facing the same problems. Pretty generally, you'll all find about the same answers.
Well, I know most of the answers, as far as the men are concerned.
Well, I think we can say that the broad principles involved in the supervision of men apply equally well in the case of women.
That ain't what I learned about women.
There are some new and different problems, Joe. I'll admit that.
Women scare me. At least, they do in a factory.
Well, maybe the women are scared too, Joe. Let's see. Most of them are working on their first industrial jobs, Joe. It's a totally unfamiliar world. You see, they're not naturally familiar with mechanical principles nor machines. Why, even the language applying to common processes and tools are new to them.
It must sound like double talk to them.
Now, if anybody wants a flam span, give with a double left-handed jerry wrench, on account of it might sabobulate the orange crate with the torpid. On the other hand, if a span flam is wanted, that's single right-handed, providing the pressing puncture is adjusted to the conch front of 37 and 2/8. Is that clear?
I know, Joe. It takes time to make them feel at home, but it can be done.
You talk like a man who knows women.
We'll see, Joe. We'll see. You know, women workers can be surprisingly good producers, and it helps a lot to get them off to a good start. When breaking in any new worker, and of course, especially a woman, you've got to explain every angle of the process down to the last detail. And since most of them lack mechanical background, you've got to study every job and subdivide it into simple operating steps. It's a good idea not to use trade terms, except, of course, where we must, and then explain in plain language exactly what such terms mean. And no matter what the job, he fits the tools and the work arrangements to suit the worker. Women workers don't mind routine, repetitive work, and they're particularly good on work that requires high finger dexterity or an unusual sense of accuracy. The inspection foreman did a good job of breaking in those girls. He remembered that what's old stuff to you and me is brand new to them.
And I was just thinking what a dub I'd be doing something that's old stuff to my wife, but new to me. Well, like baking a pie.
How did it go today, Joe?
Oh, all right.
You troubled about something?
No, everything went all right, Molly, but...
You know, I had 7 requests for time off today. Well, I guess women don't realize what it means to stick on the job.
Maybe they don't.
How was your day?
Oh, pretty quiet. I did the washing this morning and cleaned the house. And I took Junior to the dentist.
Mm-hmm.
And did the shopping. I put up 16 jars of jam this afternoon. Then I went to work on Junior's clothes. Joe, I'm sorry supper's late.
Nice going, old lady. You know, Molly, I've been thinking.
Yes, Joe.
Maybe some of those women and girls coming into the plant, well, maybe they have home responsibilities, too.
Could be.
Maybe they really do need time off. Perhaps I could rearrange their work schedules for them.
I'm sure they'd like that. So many of them have two jobs, Joe. One in the home, one in the plant.
Gee, I'm glad I thought of that.
Yes, dear.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Mr. Brooks.
How go the ladies?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was just jotting down a few points on that very subject from this manual of yours here.
Individualistic by nature and are apt to make a personal application of any action, rule, or regulation.
You're telling me.
The supervisor should scrupulously avoid spending too much time with any individual woman worker, holding everyone to the same standards of performance and avoiding any appearance of favoritism.
That's a neat trick if you can do it.
Well, Joe, this all boils down to four things to remember. One, don't mix pleasure with business. Two, women can be awfully jealous of each other.
Three, avoid undue familiarity. And finally, women are more sensitive than men.
I'll say they're sensitive. Why, only yesterday, after I finished talking to you,
yes,
I saw a foreman take it right on the chin when he caught a girl working on her drill press without her safety cap on.
Mary, you're supposed to wear a cap when working near a drill press.
Well, why pick on me? The other girls aren't wearing their caps.
Look, the rule book says wear a safety cap. So put your cap on.
There. You see what I mean? They give you an argument, and a crazy one at that.
Yes. A man probably would have kept the argument about himself and not trapped the foreman the way she did.
What do you mean, trapped him?
Oh, Lord bless me. It's an old stunt, Joe. You go after a woman worker on one point, and she switches the issue.
Well, why limit that to women workers?
Now, the issue was, why wasn't she wearing a cap?
Yeah.
And she switched him to the fact that the other girls weren't wearing theirs. And all he did was stand on his dignity. A bit stuffily, I might say. Now, if she had been a man, he wouldn't have laid down a safety rule so arbitrarily. You know, Joe, you've got to tell them the why of every rule, particularly women. Now, suppose he had handled it in this way.
Mary, your hair was just about 2 inches away from the spill, Chuck. And that's why we asked you to wear a cap, so that your hair don't get caught.
Oh, gee,
You see, rules are here to protect you and the other girls working around you.
Oh, gee, I saw some of the other girls, and they weren't wearing any
that's
caps.
That's right, but they're not working with machines. They just sit at a bench and assemble things. Nothing dangerous to them or the people nearby.
You know, I never thought of it that way before.
You have your cap with you, haven't you?
Yeah. Okay, I get it.
A foreman will always have the eternal feminine to contend with, Joe. You know, jealousy can cause you no end of trouble. Now, avoid spending any more time with one than with another. Treat them all the same, pleasantly, friendly, but with no favoritism. And above all, avoid undue familiarity. Watch the little things, Joe. The eternal feminine is very conscious of them. And finally, I don't have to tell you not to mix pleasure with business. To all the rules in supervising women, add just one more. Act quickly. Never let a situation get underway. Remember, Joe, we couldn't have won this without the help of the women in this plant.
Alright, so there was the audio from a film from that I got from archive.org called Supervising Women Workers. And it really wasn't that racist. I'm sure there are probably people that would react to that. Women, there would be some women that would react negatively to that. But basically, you know, the guy's just basically, you know, kind of explaining, hey, these women are have never had any kind of industrial experience. You know, you need to explain everything to them. And so that kind of makes sense. But I think that that's true with anybody. I mean, you know, somebody is going to go to work in a place, you know, in a sort of, you know, any kind of a job. They really need to have everything explained to them. You know, it's just good business practice to really make things as plain as day and really explain things. Explain to workers exactly what is you expect from them. You know, and that really is the best. You know, if you're going to have a business, that really is the best business practice to follow. And every business that's worth its salt, really, one of the things that they have to do is document every little aspect of the job and then kind of make that available to their employees. Since we're, you know, I didn't put out a podcast for the past 3 days, we're at 43 minutes. I'm going to go ahead. I've got another film from archive.org, and so this is going to make us, this is going to push us out to about probably an hour and a half, but since there was no podcast for the past 3 days, then, you know, we can go a little bit longer, and it shouldn't really matter. This is called The American Harvest, and this is from 1955.
Somewhere, with someone on the job, everything we have is started. Somewhere, on some fertile acre, the plow knifes through soil that abounds in promise. And the farmer, although he plows alone, is not alone. His life is tied in with the lives of many others. Of all of us who depend on him and on his mechanized labors. And he, in turn, depends on all of us. Somewhere on a lonely range, the earth trembles under the hooves of cattle on the move. And the man who rides the range alone, if he listens with vision, can hear in the rumble of the herd the beginnings of the rumble of distant machinery in the factories where others will finish the work he has begun. Somewhere, someone sets a blast to erupt rich ores of metal from stubborn rock and sets men to work in smelter and in blast furnace, in mill and in factory. And thereafter, people, many interdependent people, come to fashion the products of human inventiveness from all the bounty of nature. Wheat. And to grow the wheat, it takes a farmer. From New York to Michigan, to Nebraska to Oregon, and from the Dakotas down through all the great grain belt, 1,000, 10,000, and 100,000 wheat farmers grow the finest of wheat. Raw material for industrial alcohols, for fine finishes. Sugar. And to grow sugar, the sugar farmer. In the bottomlands of Mississippi and the Everglades of Florida, on the Delta and in the Evangeline country, grows the sugar cane. Cane sugar, raw material for carbon and lampblack, for solvents. Cotton. And the farmer to grow the cotton. Raw material for fabrics and for lacquers and for plastics. In the Carolinas, in Georgia, Tennessee, and Arkansas, Alabama, throughout the Old South, and even in the Deep South, cotton still is king. In Texas, too, and now in California, there is a great snowy harvest. Cartload by cartload and bale upon bale, as far as the eye can see. Cotton for fabrics and wool for fabrics. On the slopes of the Sierras, a sheep herder. He grazes his flock in the high, cool air that builds thicker, longer, finer, stronger fleeces on milling backs. Mohair goats roam the plains of Arizona, Texas, and New Mexico, where all the silken fleece is tempered by baking days and toughened by freezing nights. Fine fleece of the sheep flock and long stapled fleece of the mohair goats for fine upholstery. Tough hides for tough, durable leather, and it takes tough, durable men to ride the herds to grow those hides to harvest. From the Oxbow to the Laramie, all along the Red River and the Rio Grande, 1,000, 10,000 outflung herds, with sun and with wind, with rain and with sand as her tools, with heat and with cold, nature burnishes and strengthens hide and hair on the open range, from Dodge City to the foothills of the Western Mountains. Perhaps there are jobs you never thought of as being an important part of the great American economy pattern. But every basic task is essential to the necessity and convenience of all in this blessed land of all of us. West or South, no matter where you go or what you are looking for, you'll find somebody working. Working as a part of the vast and intricate and interlocking network of production that leads the raw material to finished product. The turpentine barrel in Florida and in Georgia is the first link in an endless conveyor belt that winds its way from south or east to west and north, from Portland, Maine to Portland, Oregon. In the oil fields of all America, there is a man-made tree that grows. A deep-rooted tree that is to yield a strange assortment of fruits, which will be soap and candles, paints and asphalts. From its roots thousands of feet in the earth, the oil well rig brings forth the harvest of precious sap that is to become a polish and a lubricant and a coloring and a fuel. In the giant test tubes and apparatus of the refineries, The oil crudes here are cracked and distilled. Here are cleaned and purified. Here are separated and sorted into 100 basic materials for 1,000 interdependent industries and 1,000 times 1,000 interdependent workers, managers, and engineers. On the job, commanding great tools, from deep within the plentiful earth, come the metal ores with which America is so richly blessed. Copper for bearings and copper for batteries. Copper for radiators and for electrical systems. Copper from Utah and Montana, from Michigan and Wyoming, from Colorado and New Mexico, from Idaho and Arizona and Nevada. And again, more of the red gold metal from Washington and Oregon. This red, powdery earth is rust. Call it iron ore, call it ferric oxide. It is the touchstone that has magically transformed a civilization. In the raw, red earth of Hibbing on the Mesabi, the Clinton and Vermilion ranges, steel has its beginnings. The mother of steel is iron. There is more than a ton of iron and steel in the car you drive. Several kinds of iron and more than 100 kinds of steel. And from the rusting earth come the ores that are the beginnings of all that rich harvest of metals born of iron and sired by the coal that is mated with iron to make steels of many kinds. Soft coal. Hard coal. And the coke that comes from coal to bring steel into being. To purify and refine the steels, coal and coke. To harden steel for roller bearings and for starter motor assemblies, fine molybdenum. To toughen steel and precision parts, fine vanadium. To shape and to polish precise mechanical parts, crystalline quartz. For alloy steels, for stainless steel, for plating bumpers and ornamental trim, bright chromium. For the tiny filaments in electric light bulbs, tungsten. For storage batteries, for radiator assemblies, and for the Babbitt metal in engine bearings, pure lead. Even the more famously precious metal, gold. Any metal can be more precious than gold if it is the one metal needed at the time. Each metal may depend on one or more of the others for successful use. Copper and aluminum are precious in themselves. And all these ores for all these many metals call for many men to dig them from the earth and bring them forth. Any natural lack or artificial shortage may stop the entire economic parade. You may be a lumberjack teamed up in Washington or Maine, in Mississippi or in Michigan, in Florida or Georgia or East Texas, in the Paul Bunyan country or the Empire of the Pacific Northwest. Trees you fell and the logs you drive make pulp for paper to blueprint the dreams that put 100,000 men to work on a new model and a new job. The way we do it in America takes a lot of different people working together in a lot of different places. As all rivulets and brooks flow to make the river, so all the wondrous products of forest and ranch, mine and farm flow together. On highways of steel, the many raw materials move, contributions of every state in the Union. On highways of gravel and concrete, roll the basic supplies for the mills of industry. And on the high air lanes of the trackless skies, fly products to the factories for processing. In the textile mills of Pennsylvania, Connecticut, and the Carolinas, sheep wool and mohair are the beginnings of more interrelated jobs for men and for women. Spun by mechanical spiders into gleaming strands, cotton, sheep wool, and mohair are woven by incredibly precise mechanical fingers into luxury fabrics. Corn, the golden treasure of farmers in Iowa, Indiana, and Illinois, and corn of Kansas, Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio, and Nebraska. One way of changing corn into leather is on the sub-assembly line of the feeding lot. But a shorter way is through the magic of chemistry. Corn is now directly processed into the plastic ingredients of artificial leather. With these rich and glowing colors, the chemists improve on nature. Yard after endless yard of perfect and flawless material bears ingrained in its very structure the colors and designs that will enhance its beauty in the interior trim of the finest motor cars. The tire you ride on, born in a Mississippi cotton patch, in a cane field in Louisiana. Maybe it started when some of its strange synthetic makings were pumped up from the ground in California or boiled up from the earth in Texas. And in the factories of Detroit and Akron and Dayton, men weave and fashion the basic materials, cotton and rayon, sulfur and carbon, rubber from trees and rubber from oil wells. Gripping, springing, live thing, resiliently spry and untiringly useful. Sand and flame make glass, but it takes skilled men to grind and polish glass to optical clarity for safety vision. Seeing to all of it, then again seeing that the finished product is perfect for seeing, means yet another long chain of interdependent jobs from sandpit through factory. The processing of fine ores into finer steels for the finest of product brings into play a great range of facilities. The linkage of jobs to be done along the line is always and infinitely expanding. From flat stock and sheet metal, bar and rod and ingot, come the basic forms to be forged and pressed, to be cut, to be ground, and then polished into many thousands of interrelated but separate and individual parts in factories located along all the railways and highways of America. Were the bumpers of your family car steel from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and steel from Pittsburgh, California, joined with the copper from Utah and chromium from Texas for beauty combined with massive protection. The handiwork of men in the mill and men in the smelter makes work for the hands of men in the casting and forging plants. Melted and cast into the cylinder block of the valve and head engine are the gray iron pigs. Here in gray iron are the tough settings for the bone structure of the finest transportation for all of us on all our roads and boulevards. What we harvest, what we dig, and what we produce roll into the work days and pay days and play days of all of us. Here, gleaming and precise, is a differential pinion gear. It took a miner to get it from the ground and a railroad man to carry it to the docks. A crew of merchant seamen cargoed the red dust to the blast furnaces. It took the chemist and the metallurgist to alloy and temper it before it could be shaped. Engineers designed it, using pencils made in Pennsylvania and slide rules from New York. To design and build the phenomenal machine tools to make the machines, it took men in other plants. To build these intricate and wonderful machines themselves took other skillful men in other factories. To guide and to use the machines takes more men with hands that are skilled and finely productive. Behind each such job is the mighty panorama of men at other jobs. All of us making a living and making a fine product for others and ourselves and our families. For all of us who run machines and for all of us who sell other things to other men who run machines. Gauges. To increase the powers of vision 1,000 times. To make the sense of touch so delicate that it can weigh a puff of smoke. To magnify the inch 1,000,000-fold. Gauges that are marvels of precision extend the senses of men in the countless comparisons, inspections, and tests that finalize the perfection of each working part. It takes supreme precision to give us the smooth and effortless driving that all of us want. But men and women, and only men and women, have the judgment to tell right from wrong, to separate the best from anything less than the best. Making sure we have done right by all the finest materials America can supply calls for a whole new category of excellence in service. Vigilance and devotion applied to the ideal of seeing that only the best passes inspection. In the factories, locally built, giving local employment in every great area of the nation. Each factory, with its system of communications and intercommunications, is in itself a part and portion of other factories, which begin where it ends or end where it starts, to fabricate or fashion or finish the fine products of the thousands of suppliers and the thousands of suppliers who supply those suppliers with all the parts of all the components that help to make up the complete automobile. Today's product of the superbly equipped plants is the life story of 10,000 engineers, with hundreds of supporting departments and thousands of supporting suppliers, completed by the master hands of 1,000,000 factory men who inscribe all their ideas in metal. The careful and meticulous attention to every detail of quality and perfection has resulted in constantly improved performance, efficiency, and stamina through the years. That is the story told in the rhythm of the wondrously precise machines as they dance to the mastery of the workers' hands. Of more than 17,000 parts must fit smoothly, accurately, rightly with some other part. And the men on the assembly lines know that each part will be there when it is needed, because someone plans it that way and manages it that way. The men on the assembly lines know that each material will be fitting and each part will fit, because someone builds it that way, and someone checks it to see that it is that way. And so it is that in the finished motor car, 17,000 separate and individual parts are so well designed and so well combined, all to give us just the qualities we demand in our finest of transportation. The beauty and the comfort and the fine, long-life performance with fine economy. From all the designs and all the plans, all the materials from all the processes, and all the parts made by all the skills of all the men and all the magic of all the machines, move through all the pageant of production in a great orchestration of interdependence, one upon another and another, into a fine climactic assembly of the finest products of all of us, for all of us, for all the farms and all the cities and towns of all our land. And the men who inspect the final product know that each part must be of perfection certified, quality first to last. The harvest of America's finest automobiles keeps rolling off the assembly lines year after year, every year finer and finer. The face of America has been changed. A factory is built out in the open country, and quickly a great city arises around it. Over broad highways made by and made for the automobile, what Americans have produced comes back to serve Americans. So it is that we can live in the country, work in the city. Life in America has changed. So it is that we can make our living on a farm and have a home in town. So it is that we can live where we want to. The shopping centers now come out to meet us. The ever-expanding involvement of people takes on a new dimension, the great new dimension of interrelated use. The new individual transportation means new freedom of movement to all of us, the dispelling of distance, and for country dwellers as for city dwellers, a new and far and wide range of life. New businesses, large and small, have developed from putting America on wheels. It has created more jobs for more people, all interdependent on each other. And all continue to profit from it in ever new ways in each new generation of youth. Putting America's children on wheels has changed our schools. It has made possible better education, has built for better training for tomorrow. And all will profit from it in health and wealth and recreation. Putting America's workers on wheels now means that there is more work within ready reach, more work for men to do, and more ways to get to the work and make more money. On the money somebody else makes, all of us are dependent for the harvest of money we make. In all America, the money we make on any job changes hands many times. And every time it changes hands, it benefits all of us, the miner and the farmer and the rancher, all producing the finest materials. The worker and the machine, all using the finest, the newest processes to do finely by those finest materials, building the finest and the largest low-cost cars and trucks for everyone to haul anything, anywhere, and haul anyone, including ourselves. And so it is that all of us in interdependence live independently on wheels. And all this far-reaching interdependence is the great secret of why it is possible to put America's automobile within the reach of so many people. And all America, all its rock-bound beauty, all its pleasant vistas, all its historic shrines, and all its ways of living, all its sports and recreations, all its scenic grandeur, along all its far-flung highways, within the reach of all.
Okay, so that was called American Harvest, and that was from 1955. We're still not quite out to an hour and a half. We're at 73 minutes, but anyway, probably better be cutting this off and see if I can't get it uploaded and published and then get headed to bed here in a bit. So I'm going to be home for the next few days. I did find out that got a furnace problem. Can't get my furnace to come on. I'm going to have to call the furnace guy. You know, of course, at the beginning of the summer, I had a problem. You know, I had to have the air conditioner replaced, the air conditioner portion of the heating and cooling replaced. I've had quite a bit of problem, you know, over the past few years with this furnace, different parts of it not wanting to work properly. In this case, it seems to be there's a little starter motor that has to come on, and that little starter motor is probably, I don't know, it's not coming on. It's got, you know, there's probably some kind of little, you know, the guy was telling me all it takes is just an insect or something, and it can cause it to fail, to not to come on. So I'm going to have to call him and get him to come out here, you know, either that or my younger brother, one, you know, either one of my younger brothers could probably work on it. I'm not, you know, I would work on it myself, but I'm just not, It's just not my area of interest, and I really don't like taking that stuff apart and messing with it. You know, it's just not, you know, if it was a computer, that would be one thing, but it, you know, furnace, that's just not my, you know, I'm not interested in that, and I'd rather either, you know, have somebody that knows what they're doing, or, you know, call a professional and just have, you know, somebody that actually knows what they're doing with it and pay the price. So, but I am going to have to get that fixed, because we are going to be moving into some cooler weather and want that furnace to be coming on. You know, so here we go again. But in this case, I think it's just this little starter motor is not kicking in, you know, and it has to kick in, because the way that works, the little starter motor comes on, and then the furnace, the firebox, you know, lights up, and then it gets up to a certain temperature. Once it hits that certain temperature, then the main fan comes on, and then, you know, and that distributes the heat through the forced air ventilation system. And so what's happening, you know, but the little fan has to come on, you know, that feeds air to the fire. And if that doesn't come on, then, you know, the fire will never light, you know. So there's a number of different sequence, you know, things that have to happen in the right sequence in order for the furnace to come on. You know, the furnace does have a, you know, kind of a simple sort of a logic board in it. And so certain things have to happen, and they've got all kinds of different fail safes involved to keep the thing from blowing up, because it you know, it's running on, well, in my case, it's running on propane. The thing also would, you know, it's would run on natural gas as well. Either, you know, this is a kind of a dual fuel type of furnace where it will run either on one or the other, depending on the, you know, they just have to install the appropriate nozzle. And of course, the gas is, either way, if whether it's propane or natural gas, it's extremely explosive stuff. And so, you know, they designed this with furnace with all kinds of safety things involved with it. You know, and so, but in any case, it's not working right. I'm going to have to call somebody. So here we go again. So anyway, hope everyone is having a great week so far. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.